So I sat down to make some notes for this video, and beforehand I was like, what's actually been happening? Am I actually going to have anything to talk about over the last week, which of course was the Christmas week as well. People tend to go and do other things other than the cyber things. And then I started looking at my Twitter timeline. I was like, hey, there's actually some really, really interesting stuff here, including a blog post on a topic which I'm becoming increasingly passionate about. So I'm going to jump into it. And the first two things are kind of related, and they come back to messaging from organizations on Twitter, bad messaging, and then how they handle it. And it's a sort of a story of two tales here where both organizations are going in very, very different directions. And I think some credit is due in one of these cases, and I think, frankly, some criticism is due in the other case. And I'll talk about both now. So the first one here, now this was Christmas Eve, and Sophos put out a tweet which wasn't very accurate. Now, they've deleted the original tweet, which was the right thing to do, but they've subsequently screen capped it and tweeted it again with a retraction. So I can actually read you what the original tweet says because they've reposted it. So the original tweet here said, 12 days of cybersecurity tips. Look for a padlock in the URL bar. A padlock in the address bar and a URL that starts with HTTPS means the website uses an encrypted or secure connection. If not, you can be sure it's a fake. Now, this is problematic for two main reasons. Number one is that it implies that just because you see a padlock on HTTPS, the site is trustworthy, which of course is not the case. We see a huge number of phishing sites these days using HTTPS. Barclays Bank got spanked by the Advertising Standards Authority last year for very, very similar messaging, and they had to retract the ad. It's misleading. It's inaccurate. Padlock does not equal trust. Whole other story we can go into there. So that was the first bit. Second bit, the point here about if not, you can be sure it's a fake. I just pushed out that update to YNO HTTPS like a week and a bit ago, and there are a huge number of websites out there that are still not doing HTTPS. Bureau of Meteorology in Australia. It is a legitimate site. It's not HTTPS. It's not fake. So Sophos' messaging was off there. Oh, something to my light. Anyway, the joys of random recording places. Anyway, so let me play with my light. I wonder if I can make it go off, up. Ah, who cares? You don't need to see me. So where were we? Sophos, right. So their messaging was off. I did quote tweet them and I did say, look, Sophos, I think you need to reconsider the messaging. And to their credit, they did. They deleted the original tweet. Now here's their subsequent tweet. They said, over the weekend, we sent out this tweet with the following outdated information from an old article. We apologize for the information. I would still argue whether the information was ever actually correct. It was more commonly reliable. That sounds a really wishy-washy term. Back in the day, it was more common to see legitimate websites with HTTPS and illegitimate ones didn't have it. I get that. Now we've got ubiquitous HTTPS. It's free. It's easy. Thank you. Let's encrypt, etc. So the messaging is a little bit different. Regardless, I acknowledge that it was inaccurate. Here's what you should know. Just because sites have HTTPS cert doesn't mean they are legit. Also, the padlock is going away very soon. I thought that was actually interesting because I've sort of gone, what we had before was old and it's wrong. Here's how it is today. Also, in the future, this is what's going to happen. And of course, we've seen many indications from browser vendors that in the future, as HTTPS becomes more and more ubiquitous, the necessity to have the positive visual indicator, which is the padlock, is going to kind of disappear. It won't make sense. And instead of the positive visual indicators, which people don't pay that much attention to anyway, they're going to increase the visibility of the negative visual indicators. In other words, just highlighting more and more and more when people don't have HTTPS, which is a good thing. So, credit to Sophos. Bad tweet, deleted, fixed it, but also repeated the old tweet just so people could see what it was. Because otherwise, everyone jumps up and they go, what was the old tweet? What happened? They've deleted something. I want to know what it is. If only there was a way of it not being permanently deleted from the internet. So good on those guys for dealing with that in the way they did. Now, that's the good example. Let's move on to the bad example. And this particular company is no stranger to bad examples. This one popped up at the time of recording. Where were we? It was December. Just over a day ago. A day ago? Almost 2 days ago. Now, someone has popped up here. and they've said, I won't begrudge a sponsored post, got to pay bills, but some of these points seem off. What say you, Troy Hunt, Let's Encrypt? And this is Go Get SSL. Now, Go Get SSL has featured here before. I have talked at some length about Go Get SSL because they popped up literally just 2 weeks before this one talking about getting four-year certificates. And the messaging was very, very much around pay us money, you'll get a certificate that lasts for 4 years. By the way, once you drill into it, no, you don't actually get four-year certificates. What you actually seem to get is you get a subscription, which means that when the certificate expires after 2 years, or 27 months being the maximum expiration period for the certificate, then you will get another one for free, which you then have to go and manually install. And just doesn't sound quite as sexy as a four-year certificate, does it? So their messaging was enormously misleading. Now, the problem here is you've got a website, css-tricks.com, and this is a great site. I have used this site many times myself. In this website, you've got a sponsored blog post. Now, you've always got to be careful about this. Now, this is from Chris, and his last name escapes me. It is here in the tweet thread. I'm going to link to it. The problem you've got here is that the messaging in this sponsored blog post is way, way, way off. At best, it's misleading. At worst, it's outright deceitful, lies, wrong. I'm going to write about this, incidentally. So I'm only going to try and cover it briefly now because this thing just did descend into a typical Twitter shit fight overnight. But I do want to write about it in more detail because this is becoming a recurring theme where GoGet SSL in particular pops up and just says, as I told them in a DM, which I'm going to repeat in my blog post, batshit crazy messaging, which I think is a fair term. Now, there are things in here. Where do I even begin with this? Things in here along the lines of, and again, I'm going to try and avoid like delving too much into this rabbit hole now because I don't want to write about it in more detail. Things in here along the lines of, you know what? I've just got to find it. I've got to find the original link. I can't read the sponsored blog post now because it no longer exists for reasons we're going to talk about very, very soon. But the joy of the internet is that nothing is ever actually permanently deleted. So, archive.org does somehow have a copy of this. So, let's go through what was actually in there and why it was highlighted in this blog post. Why does archive.org always have problems when I try to search like this? Ah, screw it. I'm just going to read what was in the tweet. So, in the tweet, we've got this bloke saying, there are multiple points here which were misleading. So, you know, these were points around things like the command line is hard and the command line I want to be really careful what I say now. And you'll see why I'm being really careful what I say when I get to the other tweet a little bit later on. Basically implying that there was complexity around the command line. Now, it's kind of a weird thing because if you're living in a world where you have shell access to a box and you don't understand how to use the command line, that is a very, very odd circumstance. Lots of emphasis around stuff like 90 days. It's like 90 days is a risk. Let's get rid of 90 days and make them really, really long certificates. We know that's ridiculous because things like certificate revocation are broken. Automation means that 90 days doesn't matter. There are a few other things in here as well where they're saying, look, Let's Encrypt is no good because you don't get code signing certificates or you don't get SMIME certificates. It's like, well, as someone said in one of the tweets later on, it's like, Let's Encrypt doesn't make hamburgers or T-shirts either. The fact that they don't make something which is completely different to the thing that you're going to a CA for as it relates to HTTPS and encryption in the browser, it's just an absolutely weird, irrelevant thing. Anyway, the messaging was just really, really poor. So when this popped up, I saw it because obviously I was copied into it, and I ended up messaging Chris. And I said, look, this messaging seems to be right off. I think you should really reconsider this. There's a whole bunch of stuff here that's wrong. And let me see. As I've said, one of my tweets here, there's a history of GoGet SSL saying batshit crazy stuff. Yes, there is. So where was Chris? Here we go. So I said, come to think of it, there really should be pressure put back onto those spreading disinformation. Chris Coyer, can I send you /CSS? He actually has the Twitter account @CSS. Good job. Good Twitter handle. Can I get you or CSS to push back on GoGet SSL messaging and ask them to clean up their act? This is really out of line. Now, Chris, massive kudos to Chris, because Chris has come back pretty quickly and he said, it's my own ignorance at work here a bit. I'm not expert enough in this realm to spot false claims easily, hence me asking about the Let's Encrypt comparison. Feel free to email me at, and he's put his email address here in the tweet, and I can help sort it out. So I did email Scott. I emailed Chris. I copied Scott because Scott is an authority on these things, and there are bits of this discussion, particularly around some of the elliptic curve encryption, etc., which he is better equipped to discuss than me. So we had a chat with Chris, and Chris has subsequently pulled the sponsored blog post. Now, I think there are really two things at play here. So number one was that there was a lot of inaccurate information on there. Now, I appreciate Chris is the CSS guru. He does the CSS things. He may not understand some of the other issues that were raised by GoGet SSL. He sort of has to take my word or Scott's word on it. You know, that is one topic. The other thing about this is, though, is that this discussion descended into just an absolute farce. Like, honestly, I'll link to the original tweet. Read through the thread. I tried counting them. There's at least 50, 60 plus messages from GoGet SSL arguing with people on Twitter. So everyone in this thread is saying, you're wrong. This is misleading. You've got this wrong. That's crazy. Clean up your act, sort of thing. And they're just there arguing with everyone and just getting super, super obnoxious about it. To the point where, I'll give you a good example, and this is why I'm just being careful about the things I say here as well. We got to a point here where Scott's in the discussion and he says, you seem happy that you can spread false information faster than it can be called out. And again, a lot of this is false information. You don't get four-year certificates. I know what they mean once you get through to the fine print, and it's like you get renewed certificates, etc., but it is false and misleading the way it's represented. Now, rather than them go, oh, I see what you say, maybe we'll improve the messaging or give a valid argument as to why the messaging is correct, they responded instead with this. So this is to Scott. Oh, just wanted to mention that technically you are claiming, side note, this is a Latvian-based company. English does appear to be a second language here. There are loads of typos and grammatical mistakes. And I'm not saying that to be derogatory to them. I mean, good on them. I speak like one and a little bit languages. That's it. The fact that they can do this by my book is actually quite impressive. What I think it means is that very often when they say one thing, they mean another thing. Now, cut them some slack for that. But when that happens, they should sort of go, okay, I understand now that this means something different to what we thought it meant. So you'll see it's sort of a heap of typos and just very odd communication. So let me say this again. They're replying to Scott. Oh, just wanted to mention that technically you are claiming we provide fake information to our customers. Need to check with legals if that statement against our company can be called to action. Many of you have heard of the Streisand effect, and it was mentioned multiple times following that, because of course once you start that, suddenly everyone's like, oh, this is interesting, what's going on here? So Scott quote tweeted that, great response to criticism, try to bully and intimidate me into silence with legal threats. So this is just, why would you do this? You know what I think it is? Like, if nothing else, it speaks to the absolute desperation that organizations selling certificates are resorting to now. They're like, holy shit, like these things are being given away for free and they're made really, really easy. We've got to find other ways of selling them. Let's try and discredit Let's Encrypt. And keep in mind as well, it's not just Let's Encrypt. There's Bypass in Norway who's doing free certificates with Acme Protocol. You can go to Cloudflare and get free certificates. Microsoft is doing free certificates now if you're on Azure. There's free certificates all over the place. Let's Encrypt, because they were sort of, I guess, the first ones to come along and do that at massive scale, are often the target of organizations like this. Have a read through the thread. Like, it is just, I'm going to stand by my description of batshit crazy. And I will write this up in more detail later on. Now, the last bit here, of course, is how it all ended up with Chris actually pulling the sponsored blog post. So if you were to go to css-tricks.com/goGetSSL now, I'm just going to read you Chris's piece and then we'll move on. Hey, Chris here. I'm pulling the sponsored post. It was a paid SSL service. I'm very much not an SSL expert. I've always relied on the host to install SSL certificates on my servers and manage it. I know enough that I know about Let's Encrypt and how that's a big deal in the industry in how they offer SSL certificates for free. So, when I agreed to this post, I asked them to compare themselves to Let's Encrypt and they sent me 12 points that differentiate them. The points seem fine to me, as a non-expert, if a little spun with marketing. Yeah, I agree, Chris. That's true. But there was a good amount of pushback on Twitter on those points, and the company got pretty aggressive on Twitter about it in a way that was a major turnoff to me. This is not an acceptable way to act for any company. Let me rephrase. Okay, no, it's his typo. I've just called out the Latvians for having typos. This is not an acceptable way to act for any company to act that I want to be associated with. Sorry. So, like, massive kudos to Chris here. And it's a little bit like the Sophos thing before, right? Like, there's a mistake being made. How do you deal with the mistake? Look, I make a lot of mistakes too. Trust me, I've put out tweets which were wrong before. I've had to apologize and say I got this wrong and, you know, here's why, et cetera, et cetera. So big kudos to him. Now, there's a sponsored blog post as well. So he's probably had to give them back his money, which would have come out of his pocket too. I don't know a lot about Chris, but I imagine he spends a lot of his personal time building this thing and relying on sponsors to help fund his food and roof and things like that, like many of us do. So massive kudos to Chris. I think that's a really, really gutsy move. I'm going to write this up later on in a bit more detail and actually tackle those points which Go Get SSL keep hammering on. For the moment, they now have that on their record. So good one, Go Get SSL. Major turnoff, not an acceptable way for a company to act. Maybe clean up your act after this. On to the next thing. Where were we? I consume more time than what I thought. Turkish crime family. Now, there is a name that I haven't heard for a couple of years. So this was kind of interesting. And I want to sort of go back to the beginning with this. I wrote a blog post, 7th of April, 2017. And this was around the time when there was a lot of news about a group alleged to be a group who called themselves the Turkish crime family, alleged to have hundreds of millions of Apple iTunes accounts, and I know that iTunes is probably not the right term for this. Let's call them Apple accounts that had access to things like iCloud backups. These guys claimed to have hundreds of millions, and they were going to nuke them. They were going to wipe all the content out of them. And they had little videos and demonstrations and things like this, and the whole thing just smelled bad. And what I mean by smelled bad, all right, it's always going to be bad if someone has access to this, but it didn't smell legit. It did not feel like they actually had access to these accounts. It felt like a lot of big noting. And they were threatening to delete these accounts and remote wipe Apple devices if payment, so they wanted ransom from Apple, wasn't made by, ironically, the date of which the blog post was made and obviously stuff wasn't wiped. Now, I sort of went through this. They had some samples out there. I pulled the samples. I went through. I threw that against Have I Been Pwned. I found a very high correlation with existing data breaches. And what I sort of noticed there is... So Scott's just woken up, and he's messaged me about the CSS tricks thing. He says... So he's reading the fact that the blog post got removed. He says, I'm sure they will be thrilled. Has it hit Twitter yet? All right, I'm recording, Scott. We'll come back to that. So anyway, Turkish crime family. So they're sort of talking about the fact that they've got all these Apple accounts. When I threw the samples that they shared against Have I Been Pwned, massive correlation with existing data breaches. And in fact, I think it was it the Evony breach? Yeah, so Evony just featured across all of this. And I basically concluded that, look, what they seem to have done is just taken a whole bunch of accounts from another data breach, never released some of the credentials work. I then went through and sort of made the point that, and this is what I think is really, really interesting to look back on now, 99.9% of the accounts that are in both the Evony breach and the Apple data share the same password. Yeah, because that was right. They had like a sample of email addresses and passwords from Apple, and it rounded to 100% crossover with Evony. So these guys had just gone and grabbed data from Evony and gone, this is Apple, and we're going to reuse it to reset all the accounts. Please give us ransom now, Apple. And of course, Apple's going to chill. Apple would know this. Apple probably has the same data breach as I do. Now, where it got interesting here, and this is where I think it's very curious to look back on, is that the genre of the people involved felt like children. felt like kids, either legally kids or, as I've said so many times before, young enough that for us in our 30s and 40s, we sort of look back and go, ah, oh, they're kids, you know, late teens, early 20s. Almost always male. They fit a very, very common demographic. I'm not sure if that's the right thing to say anymore, but this seems to be what happens. Every time these guys get caught, it is young males, teenagers, early 20s. And somewhere in here, I've gone through and said, yeah, so Zach Whitaker actually called them out here. So Zach Whitaker has a now deleted tweet. I'm not quite sure why. He says, immature and naive hacker thinking wiping over 200 million iPhones will get him rich and not bludgeoned to death by an angry mob. How cute. Now, I've said Zach has been pretty blunt here. It's hard to argue. These are very likely kids, either in the legal sense or in that they're a lot younger than most of us. One, and Zach is right. They're painting a big target on their backs. Of course, they're full of bravado and, frankly, are probably a bit excited about how much attention they've received, but this is now starting to play out in a very familiar way. If they keep going, it will also have a very familiar ending. Let us talk about the ending, because that's what's been in the news for last week. So, as it turns out, the person involved was, as of a couple of weeks ago when this was in the news, a 22-year-old man. So he would have been 20, if not even 19, not sure when his birth date is, at the time of the blog post. So it fits the demographic. He's a normal-looking kid. And what I mean normal, like there's no hoodie, right? Like he just looks like someone says me wearing my hoodie. He just looks like someone you'd meet walking down the street, normal everyday kid. Kerem Albayrak, who is actually Turkish. Pro tip, if you're going to be a hacker and give yourself some sort of hacker name, don't make it too close to your origin or your real name or something like that, because people do join the dots, right? So anyway, he's been sentenced to a 2-year suspended jail term, 300 hours of unpaid work, and a 6-month electronic curfew, which I assume... does an electronic curfew just mean you don't get any electronic toys for 6 months? That would be right. Anyway, so the NCA in the UK, there's the National Crime Authority, has obviously thrown the book at them. It's funny just to go through and look at these old tweets. They've still got the Twitter account up. Interesting. UK police arrested the hacker on March 28, 2017. NCA said they found no evidence he ever had access to Apple's iCloud infrastructure. Pled guilty, sentenced today. The NCA did not announce other arrests of members of the Turkish crime family hacking group. Now, I also found this a little bit... I don't want to say... It's not pleasing, because I don't want to see, like, yeah, okay, he hasn't gone to jail. I was going to say I don't want to see young kids go to jail. I don't see, like, young kids make mistakes like this which mess up the rest of their lives. But there's a little bit of it which pleased me, because in that original blog post of mine, I've got a screen cap of their Twitter profile. At some point, they decided they didn't like me, and they got a screen cap of one of the interviews I did earlier on with my face, put me as their profile, as if it's somehow I'm like the Turkish crime family person. And made a whole bunch of comments about me, which weren't very nice. So to see it pan out this way, yeah, okay. You know, I'm sort of... It feels about right, though, doesn't it? You know? Doesn't have to go to jail, but gets a very, very serious slap on the wrist. Imagine if he was in the US, right? So what would it have looked like there? Probably not so happy. Anyway, that was a very predictable outcome. We see this all the time. The number of people I interact with online that fit this demographic absolutely down to the T. And as much as I could see back in April 2017 how this was going to end, I can see a whole bunch of other ones now. So, you know, 2 years from now, might be updates on those folks. All right, so that was all just background stuff. Blog post this week. Now, there was a blog post this week, and it relates to a new data breach. And actually, I'm not even sure that we should use the word data breach, because it's basically public information. Now, this relates to a company called Factual. And Factual is, for all intents and purposes, a data aggregator. They fit into this broad genre of data aggregator. And one of the things that they've done here is they've aggregated a whole bunch of company information. Now, company information includes not just the company and the phone number and the address, but people who work there, things like their email address. And they have a service where you can buy this data. Interestingly, they featured in a recent New York Times piece about how much tracking there is of people based on their mobile phones and the fact that there's so many different apps that use the same services to track where you go. If I remember, I'll link to that. This is absolutely fascinating New York Times article. Actually, regardless, it's in the blog post about the factual data. So someone pops up, they've sent me factual data. There's, what was it, 2.5 million unique email addresses, about 6 million rows. And it's just sort of the same old stuff, okay? We've got name, email, country, region, locality, address, postcode, latitude, longitude, telephone, fax, website. This is a file that was created on the 27th of March 2017. Sorry, it had almost 8 million records in it. I reached out to a whole bunch of Have I Been Pwned subscribers and said, look, is this data actual? In fact, just to be clear, I did reach out to Factual as well. And they were cool. They responded extremely well. I don't like the business model of data aggregators, but I do respect the way they handle this. So I asked, is this data about you accurate? Question number one. Question number two, do you consider it to be public domain info that should be redistributed? Was point number two. Point number three, should it appear in Have I Been Pwned? And what was interesting is a lot of the responses actually said the data was inaccurate, which is kind of interesting because that calls into question how reliable are data aggregators. But of course, they're scraping. We're just cautious about everything I say now. Many of them, I don't know if Factual does this or not, many of them do scrape the information up in some sort of automated fashion. So of course, you're going to have some data integrity issues. The question then around whether you consider the info to be public domain that should be redistributed, people are pretty emphatic here. Someone says, no, that address is private and it is a home address on my credit report. That feels uncomfortable, doesn't it? Someone else says, as information appears to be fake, it should not be available online to the public. Someone else, my email should not be associated with those other name, address, website that you found. I live in Norway, don't run any businesses other than just the tiny personal Etsy shop you see linked below. Now, I sort of pondered whether to load this into Have I Been Pwned or not, but I keep coming back to this point where every time I ask people, if your data appears online and there's nothing you can do about it, spam list, credential stuffing list, data aggregated like this, do you want it to go into Have I Been Pwned? Do you want to know about it? And consistently, the overwhelmingly large majority says, yes, we want it in Have I Been Pwned. So it's in Have I Been Pwned. Now, I wrapped up, I also included a quote from Factual. They gave me a quote that I could share publicly. So again, good on those guys. I do appreciate it when organizations are polite and forthcoming and they actually become part of this story. Sophos, good job. Go get SSL, not so much. Other story. I finished this blog post with a tweet from Jeremiah Grossman here. It's a really interesting tweet, and I think it's a good thought experiment. He says, not so long ago, there was something called a telephone book that published effectively everyone's name, address, and telephone number publicly. Today, when that same data is mistakenly made available online, it's called a data breach. Culturally, what's changed? I won't discuss it here because I've gone on for a bit, but have a look at his tweet and have a look at the responses because it's actually a really, really interesting discussion. Because we did used to get effectively a massive data breach dumped on our doorstep every year. I remember even recent years, must have been within about the last 4 years, I still had phone books being dumped on my doorstep. Big data breaches. So that was the situation with Factual and with all the other things. Last thing this week is sponsor Varonis is sponsoring my blog post again. They're talking about their free video course, 7 Hidden Office 365 Security Settings You Can Only Unlock with PowerShell. I do know Varonis very well. I've done a bunch of courses for them that are free that you can also go and access. I'll spend a lot of time with them. I endorse their message because it's a good message. So go and check out what Varonis does. Thank you very much for watching this week. This is actually the last weekly update for 2019. I made it all the way through 2019 and didn't miss a single week, which frankly, under the circumstances, is a bit of a freaking miracle. But I think I'll be talking more about that in 2020, and I'll come to you with the first one for 2020 in a week from now. Thanks for watching.